In the name of the living God, who is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen. And please be seated. Well, this morning, we're going to be talking about freedom. Or, as they say in the South, with a little bit of a twang, freedom, right? We're talking about freedom this morning, in part, as you may expect, because we celebrate the 4th of July this week, but also in part because our epistle reading for this morning is from Romans chapter 6. In the chapters preceding our reading for today, St. Paul has declared that Christians are no longer under the law. We are not under the law, Paul says, because we are under grace. Now, this would have been a radical claim in the first century of the Jewish practice. So in our chapter for today, Paul imagines a conversation partner posing a series of questions, all of which amount to something like this. If we are not under the law, Paul, are we free to do whatever we want? Is that what freedom is? Now, believe it or not, these questions about what freedom is are also a key theme in the 2012 comic book blockbuster movie, The Avengers. A few minutes into the movie, the antagonist, Norse god Loki, announces that he has come with glad tidings of a world made free. When asked, free from what, Loki replies, free from freedom. Freedom is life's great lie. And once you accept that in your heart, you will know peace. Then again, a little later in the movie, during an attack on a large crowd, Loki commands the crowd to kneel. And once they do, he says, is this not simpler? Is this not your natural state? It's the unspoken truth of humanity that you crave subjugation. The bright lure of freedom diminishes your life's joy in a mad scramble for power, for identity. You were made, Loki says, to be ruled. And those, like me, who watched the Disney Plus miniseries on Loki, heard Loki repeat the same sentiment one last time in the pilot episode, where he says, the first and most oppressive lie ever uttered was the song of freedom. Now, it's worth saying that the Marvel Cinematic Universe didn't invent the philosophy that Loki espouses in The Avengers. The part about it being our nature to be ruled, for example, was a crucial tenet in the philosophy of Erich Fromm. But more important to our purposes today is that we should note that it's not a coincidence that in The Avengers, it's Captain America. Remember, we're celebrating the 4th of July this Tuesday, right? It's not a coincidence that Captain America is the one who shows up and saves the large crowd from freedom-denying Loki. The clear message of the Avengers is that Loki's anti-freedom message is bad and dangerous, and that quote-unquote freedom, despite its messiness and difficulty, is an ideal worth striving for at all costs. But what I want to suggest this morning is that the confrontation imagined in The Avengers is based on a mistaken understanding of freedom that most of us here today have inherited. Most of us imagine freedom to be the sort of thing that Loki rejects and Captain America defends. But this idea of freedom is a misunderstanding of what freedom really is. Most of us have a certain idea of freedom, and we all either reject or mostly defend freedom, believing freedom is what we think it is. But what I want to suggest this morning is that from a Christian perspective, freedom isn't the thing that we have all been taught to believe that it is. I'm going to do this in two parts. First, I'm going to describe the idea of freedom we've inherited here in America. And then second, I'm going to describe a more ancient, more Christian, and I think better understanding of freedom. So first, again, here's the idea of freedom we've inherited here in America. I would call the idea of freedom we've inherited here in America a freedom of absence. A freedom of absence. We could also call this a negative idea of freedom. It's freedom as the absence of restraint. It's a negative idea of freedom because freedom refers to something not being the case. Freedom means not being restrained or not being confined or not being limited or not being coerced or compelled or pressured or whatever, right? And that this is the way that most of us generally think about freedom is also evident in the word that we tend to use as the closest synonym for freedom, namely the word autonomy. Apropos of our reading from Romans for this morning, the Latin word for law, nomos, is the heart of the word autonomy. In fact, autonomy is a compound of two Latin words, nomos, meaning law, and auto, meaning oneself, and literally means being a law unto oneself. Being autonomous means doing whatever one wishes without anyone or anything hindering us. The philosopher most responsible for our idea of freedom is Immanuel Kant, who, in the Groundwork of the Metaphysics of Morals, defined freedom as, quote, the power to initiate action from oneself. Freedom, in other words, is our power to exercise our own will. We, here in the Anglo-American tradition, receive this idea of freedom more directly from philosophers like John Locke, who Thomas Jefferson copied in our very own Declaration of Independence, which we celebrate in 2 days' time. And Locke defined freedom as, quote, a matter of being able to do whatever one wills. And also the British philosopher Thomas Hobbes, who defined freedom as the absence, there's that word again, the absence of opposition or the absence of any external impediments. But what holds all these various philosophies of freedom together is the concept of determinism, so that in this view, we live on a spectrum where we are more free the more self-determined we are, and less free the more we are determined by someone or something else. We are only truly free when we are absolutely self-determined, and we are not free if our lives are determined by others. Now, before moving on from that point, let me prefigure where I'm going by pausing to ask a question. Do any of us actually live lives that are not determined by others? Are any of us really autonomous, meaning able to do whatever we wish? Now, I don't know about you, but my answer to that question is, of course not, right? Of course not. As a single dad, most of my life is completely determined by trying to address and adapt to the chaos caused by my two small children. Anybody who has ever been married also knows that having a partner means having much of your life determined for you. And I also have a boss here at work or a state that governs how I live in public and other people in the various communities I live in whose actions have a constant impact on mine, like where I can walk or where I can park or where I can get a reservation for dinner, just for starters. Or even at a more fundamental level, I'm a human being. And being a human being comes with all kinds of natural limitations. I can't jump as high as I want, or run as fast as I want, or much less fly or shoot laser beams out of my eyes. Right? Heck, being a human being means that for literally one third of my life, my body gets so overwhelmed by that fact, by just the fact of being alive, that I have to lay down and become unconscious for hours at a time. At the end of the day, nearly all of our possible choices are determined for us. And the scope of choice that we actually have is extremely, extremely narrow. Now, there's one last thing I need to say before I tell you what I think is the more ancient, more Christian and I think better understanding of freedom, and that's this. We here in America, we Americans are especially grounded in this negative idea of freedom as an absence. We're more grounded in this idea than any other people in the world, because America was the first nation built on this idea of freedom from the ground up. The other places where this idea of freedom took hold before or around the same time as America, like Germany or England or France, these places had other ideas of freedom first and then came to adopt this idea of freedom around the 17th and 18th centuries. But we here in America, that idea of freedom is our origin story. Whereas other nations have arrived at this idea of freedom after centuries of conversation and debate about what freedom means, this idea of freedom was inscribed into the American identity from the very beginning. Therefore, and this point is absolutely crucial, in America, freedom is not just the means to some other purpose or even one ideal among many others. In America, freedom is our purpose in and of itself, the singular goal of our common life, the chief end of our common life, maximizing freedom as much as possible. No wonder it's Captain America who comes in to defend the crowd from Loki, right? We in America believe in freedom qua freedom, freedom for its very own sake. Theologian Stanley Hauerwas has indelibly called this uniquely American story the story that we should have no story except the story we choose when we had no story. Now, it's a funny turn of phrase, but it basically identifies the story we have told ourselves, namely that we are only free when we get to make our own stories up. But, as Hauerwas points out, there's a deep irony to this story that we should have no story except the story we choose when we have no story, namely that this is not a story. That story is not a story that we chose freely. It's a story we've inherited, as I've said, from Kant and Locke and others. In other words, we believe in the idea of freedom qua freedom. We've come to believe in this idea of freedom that we get to make up ourselves because we were told to by our forefathers. So much, once again, for living lives not determined by others. Okay, so if that's the idea of freedom we've inherited here in America, what is the more ancient, more Christian, and I think better idea of freedom? Well, if the American idea of freedom is a negative idea of freedom as an absence, the ancient Christian idea of freedom is a positive idea of freedom as the presence of the things that will lead to human flourishing. A positive idea of freedom as the presence of those things which will lead to human flourishing. In other words, far from thinking of freedom as the absence of restraint or limitation and compulsion, ancient Christians thought that freedom could involve all kinds of restraints and all kinds of limitations. They would have called these things disciplines or habits or practices. But that these restraints made us free. These limitations made us free because they would help us become the best and truest versions of ourselves. Now, I'm an athlete, so sometimes sports metaphors help. You could think of the American idea of freedom kind of like a little kid's soccer game. Anybody here ever been to a little kid's soccer game before? Yeah, so if you've ever been to little kid's soccer games, you know that when kids play soccer, it's a great example of what it looks like when people are a law unto themselves, autonomy. Most little kids barely know the rules of soccer, and even if they do know them, they don't really follow them. You'll often see them kicking the ball out of bounds or picking up the ball with their hands and running it or even kicking the ball into the wrong goal. and they certainly don't have most of the skills they need to play soccer well or the knowledge to work together with their teammates. And so what you inevitably happen, what you inevitably wind up with whenever little kids play soccer, every parent here knows this, is total chaos. You have kids running around the field in every direction. And you know, one of them's over here picking dandelions and the other one's over here crying because Alexander won't pass them the ball again. You know, that's my son. And then you always have a clump of kids gathered right around the ball, right? That almost all of them on both teams are all pressing in around the same ball, clumped up together and kicking each other in the shins. And the ball's going nowhere, right? The irony is that these kids aren't technically being determined by anyone or anything else. They're just doing whatever they want. But in the end, the result of that is that they are more determined by others, more trapped than if they were. By contrast, you can think of the ancient Christian idea of freedom more like the soccer we saw on display last summer in the World Cup. If you've ever seen Lionel Messi, the Argentinian captain, play soccer, then man, you know what freedom looks like. His fluidity of movement and improvisation and the things he can make a soccer ball do that expand the imagination of what human beings are capable of. It's incredible. But he can only do those things because he has years and years of practice and training, of eating the right way and exercising the right way and taking direction and coaching and instruction and building relationships with his teammates and listening to them and working with them. And yes, by doing all of this, I actually looked this up, by doing all of this within the 144 pages of the FIFA World Cup rulebook. Now, we may complain that that's a few too many rules, or we may complain when the rules are enforced in a way that we don't like. But doesn't having agreed upon rules ultimately lead to something more beautiful, more creative, and ultimately more free than the clump ball soccer that my son plays? Or if the athletic metaphor doesn't land, think about music. Right? Who's more free? The child who sits in front of the trumpet for the first time, or chooses to watch TV rather than practice his instrument? Or Wynton Marsalis playing a jazz set down in the West Village at the Blue Note, who even when he's improvising is doing it in tune and in concert with his bandmates? Who's more free? The teenager that goofs off during class and doesn't do their homework or study for their exams? Or Thomas Edison, whose tireless work and study and experiments allowed him to imagine and bring into the world thousands of new inventions that nobody had ever imagined before? And this is the crucial point, aren't we more free? Aren't we more free as a people because of the discipline and the practice these people put into their various crafts? Here's the key difference. Ancient Christians would not have said that it's authority or rules or boundaries that restrict our freedom. Rather, what restricts our freedom, it was in the first sentence of our epistle reading for today, what restricts our freedom is ourselves. We have natural limitations, as the ancients knew, and are limited by the fact that we must share this world with other people. That's not something that we can opt out of. And we are limited most of all. We're limited most of all, not by the lack of choices, but by bad choices. We are limited most by vice, as Plato and Aristotle would have said. We're limited most of all by the evil things people do, even the evil we ourselves do, what ancient Christians would have called sin. You know, ask any drug addict or sex addict or gambling addict, etc., how free their autonomy has made them. This is what St. Paul means in our reading from today when he talks about our being slaves, to sin. And even if we don't share in those addictions, we all know the ways that our own vices, that our own sin has made us less free than we ought to have been. This is why Paul can talk about not being under the law as being a slave. Not being under the law as being slaves to righteousness. Or why our prayer book refers to God as one in whose service is perfect freedom. Those phrases on their own may make us rankle a bit. You know, slaves of righteousness or service to God as perfect freedom. What a thing to say on the 4th of July. But the point, this is the point, right? The point is that true freedom is found not in having unlimited choice. A true freedom is found in doing the good, doing what's good. We are most free not when we can choose anything, but rather when we make good choices that lead to human flourishing. And then, yes, developing good habits and good disciplines and good practices that will help us keep doing the good. And then perhaps most of all, when we surround ourselves with good communities that will encourage us and support us to keep doing the good things when we are, and maybe even that will admonish and correct us to stop doing the things that aren't. So to bring all that back and answer St. Paul's question for today, what Paul is trying to say for us essentially is this. Of course you don't do whatever you want now that you're not under the law. Autonomy is not freedom. Choosing the good is. Amen.